Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode. It is Friday morning, and you are listening to the show on KJZZ with Mark Brody in Phoenix. I'm Steve Goldstein, and coming up later this hour, the Property Brothers are in the Valley. We'll talk with one of them, and we'll have the latest story in our series on aging. But first, time for the Friday Newscap segment featuring former legislative leader, former gubernatorial chief of staff, former everything, Chris Hurstom. Also, here's John Gabriel, editor-in-chief of Ricochet.com and an Arizona Republic contributor. Chris, you're itching to get going, but I'm going to start with John because I know
that's okay. I know what happens. You said something about an aging story later, so I thought you would move me to that story.
So, John, big week because Steve Bannon kind of brought fire and brimstone this week to Arizona and to Jeff Flake's reelection campaign to really support Kelly Ward. What did you make about how aggressive Bannon was? I mean, that's not a surprise, but the fact that he is now on Jeff Flake's turf.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because Trump himself has done kind of a subtler dance. Well, Trump being subtle, that's a new thing for me to allege. But being very subtle, he hasn't come out completely and fully for Kelly Ward, but he's made little indications on Twitter, his preferred medium. And but Bannon came out there and just going through the quotes from that and watching the clips that I watched from that event. If you want to know why I'm a former Republican, that pretty much defined it. It's just you had Laura Ingraham, you had J.D. Hayworth was there. Steve Bannon condemning the globalist elites, as he likes to say, and Goldman Sachs without happening to mention that he used to work for Goldman Sachs. So, yeah, it was a big kind of rah-rah event. I was surprised the crowd was fairly small. It was under 1,000 people. And I think Flake does have the institutional advantages. He's doing terribly in the polls. He has the institutional advantages. And Kelly Ward, I think even people who are as conservative or even more conservative than she is view her with a little bit of trepidation, seeing how she performed running against McCain.
Chris, first thoughts on Bannon and then go on.
Well, Steve Bannon is the chief curator of the alt-right. Wherever he goes, he peddles hate, he peddles bigotry, and he did it in Scottsdale this past week. And his endorsement of, in my opinion, a right-wing nut job, Kelly Ward, is not surprising at all. And then you had, I thought he was out of Arizona, J.D. Hayworth. You know, the flim-flam man is back again. And then you had Laura Ingraham there. I mean, it was a bizarre scene. But it's the Republican Party these days. It is the Trump Republican Party. There's no doubt about it. And I believe if the election were held today, the primary election, that Kelly Ward would beat Jeff Flake. That's just the reality. The Republican Party today is the Trump Party, and they're going to rally around their guy, and they're not going to let Jeff Flake off the hook for criticizing Trump and writing the book that he did that criticized Trump. And it's sort of pathetic to see, but it's reality. And in my opinion, whether Flake survives the primary or not, he's going to have to spend all of his money in it. He's going to be bruised and battered by the Bannon forces. And Kyrsten Sinema is going to be our next U.S. senator. That pleases me personally, but it's a fascinating political landscape these days.
Do you guys think that the primary field is now set? Because there had been a lot of talk, especially in the past couple of weeks and months, that maybe the president, some others were looking for maybe another candidate to get in, maybe a not Kelly Ward type from the right challenger for Senator Flake. Does Bannon getting involved, does that close the field, John?
I don't think that it closes the field. I think there's a lot of people. People look at Bannon as he doesn't know Arizona politics. And what's interesting is two former Breitbart reporters basically announced their dramatic split with Kelly Ward. They were helping her to run her campaign. They announced their split with her over Twitter as that campaign rally was going on. So there's even dissension among that Breitbart alt-right fringe. So I think it would be a good opportunity for somebody to jump in, because that's the thing is, even if, okay, say that you don't like Jeff Flake and you think he's terrible and globalist elite Goldman Sachs, whatever other buzzwords we're using, You look at Kelly Ward and go, wow, I don't know how this is going to go, especially against Kyrsten Sinema. And that's the thing about her. She's actually my representative. And she's done a very good job building her statewide profile, which is kind of rare for a representative, focusing on her community, but also just reaching across party lines consistently. And she's done that even before she was in Congress. So she's going to be a formidable opponent, to say the least. And I don't see someone like Kelly Ward being able to stand up to that.
Chris, do you think another Republican will get into that primary field in the Senate?
I think if they do, they'd be foolish now. If you had asked me this question 2 months ago, I would have said yes, that it'll be Jeff DeWitt or someone like that, our treasurer. But Bannon's now, you know, touched Kelly Ward, and I just think that the Trump people now are going to rally around her, and you know, when you look at Steve Bannon and Breitbart, you also look at the Mercer family that are billionaires. You know, they're the lesser known Koch brothers, and they're going to pour money. They've already given money to Kelly Ward, and they're going to give a lot more. I would expect you'll see independent expenditures on her behalf, that she won't have to raise as much money because of that herself, because she's probably incapable of raising it herself. But you know, I just think if a Jay Heiler, or a Robert Graham, former Republican Party chairman, jump in this race, I think she'll beat them and Jeff Flake at this point. You know, I just think it's it looks pretty grim for what we used to call the mainstream Republican Party.
Well, Chris, let me jump in on that, because before 2013, let's say, so when you have McCain in 2008, then Romney in 2012, to a lot of mainstream Republicans, and you're saying you don't think this is part of the mainstream anymore, hearing names like J.D. Hayworth and Laura Ingraham and now what we know about Steve Bannon, most of them would have really shuddered and thought, boy, we don't really want these people representing the party. If they're in the party and want to give us some money, that's fine, but not actually representing the party. Do you honestly think that those are more representative of the party than Jeff Flake is now?
The Bannon faction?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Now, you think that's just short-term because of Trump, or you think that's the direction it's going?
I don't know. I can't answer that question. I do think that as of today, the Republican Party, when you look at the polling, it's like 70-some percent still support Donald Trump. They're never apparently going to back off. If they haven't backed off by now, they never will. My guess is when Mueller, FBI former director, comes forward with indictments regarding the Russian investigation of a whole bunch of Trump people and maybe family members, they still won't back off. I mean, that's his 37-38% approval right there. It's Republican. And so when you look at the polling here in Arizona and nationally, you got to say 3/4 of the people are Trump people, of the Republicans, and they're not going to back off. And so therefore, they like Steve Bannon and everybody else that rallies around Trump. It is what it is. I mean, I remember Hillary Clinton. Remember that name? In those 3 debates, she stood there after Trump would say something absurd and attack a woman or something, you know, a beauty contest winner or whatever. She would just simply look at him and say, folks, this is what he is. This is what you're going to get as president. She was correct. And that's what we've got. And it is the Trump Republican Party. So, you know, hoping for the days of past when the party had with the Bushes around the party, et cetera, they're gone now.
John, last minute before we go to break on this one, I want to get your reaction to that. The fact that Steve Bannon was so comfortable being at a Scottsdale resort, where maybe 5 years ago, not so much.
Yeah, definitely. He has come back from behind the curtain. He used to be, you know, the Wizard of Oz, the man behind the curtain, screaming at staffers and getting them to write screeds against this person or that person. And now he's trying to be a star himself. He has to work quite a bit on his speaking skills, in my humble opinion. But I really agree with Chris. It is, you know, the second Trump won the nomination, it's Trump's party, and Arizona is ground zero for that. He's wildly popular here, more popular in Arizona than he is in many, many other states. So I think Kelly Ward definitely has the advantage at this point.
And that's John Gabriel, editor-in-chief of Ricochet.com, also an Arizona Republic contributor. Also here with us for the Friday newscap segment is the man with one of the finest resumes in Arizona, former legislative leader, former gubernatorial chief of staff, Chris Hurston. More of the newscap coming up in just a moment. Good morning. It's the show on 91.5. We're in the midst of our Friday newscap segment with Chris Hurston, and John Gabriel. And Chris, we've been talking a lot about Steve Bannon, and this is not going to be much of a transition from that. Senator John McCain came out very strongly, received the Liberty Medal, and without necessarily calling out the president's name, it was pretty clear that he was going after this concept of nationalism. And then yesterday, we heard from former Presidents Obama and George W. Bush as well, seeming to speak out. Significant?
Yes, it is. I mean, you know, Donald Trump now makes all former presidents look wonderful. And you want to have any of them back in office again, whether it's Obama, whether it's George W. Bush, you know, we'll take Bill Clinton. I mean, it's that kind of a contrast. And it just goes into what we were discussing before, in that the Republican Party has changed so tremendously. But I think the thing with McCain, you know, he referred, without using the name Trump, you know, he called it half-baked nationalism cooked up by people who would rather find scapegoats than solve problems. That's what he's referring to the Trump administration and the Miller folks and his staff around Trump. The thing that amazes me, though, is when Bannon comes to town or Trump or any of these folks, they have no qualms about attacking the character of John McCain, a man who is courageously fighting brain cancer. I mean, have they no decency, frankly? And what's fantastic to watch is John McCain, who's going through this, is standing tall. He refuses to not speak out, and he'll come right back at him. And I just think that, you know, I'm so proud of our U.S. Senator John McCain, but it says a lot about the lack of character, frankly, of Donald Trump and Bannon and the rest of them.
John, typically when former presidents get together, it's for the openings of presidential libraries or to raise money for some kind of cause. How unusual is it that two former presidents are now basically trashing the guy who holds their old job now?
Yeah, it's very rare. It's a little odd, and I would be more concerned if I wasn't quite as concerned about the people running Washington right now. Seeing John McCain's speech, he felt it necessary because he's dedicated his life, and I definitely have my disagreements with him about, you know, there's a problem in country X, maybe we should get involved militarily. I'm a veteran, and I don't want to see that. It's not the answer to everything. However, he has to call out this nationalism. By words, he called out this blood and soil slogan you've seen on some of the alt-right, and just really condemn that kind of inward-looking, defensive, frightened, fearful. And these are the people who act like, oh, we're the tough people, we're the nationalists. They're terrified of the world. They're terrified of everything around it. And John McCain's really providing a link to the past. And before I knew, in the late 90s, there would be speeches and award ceremonies between the elder Bush, President Bush, and Bob Dole. And it was almost like the passing of a torch. They were both stepping off the stage, this World War II era. And, you know, as a younger man, I was just sad watching that. And now McCain is that next generation, excuse me, who has really continued this post-Marshall Plan, let's keep this world order going. And it's kind of sad to see what's become of the party, and I'm sure he wants to get in any last statements if he decides to retire, and hopefully he'll live for a very long time. But just wanting to push back against this ugly inward, which is really not – we're heading to the future, but it seems like such a dramatic step backward.
Guys, let's move on in our last couple of minutes to an Arizona Republic investigative story about Governor Doug Ducey giving pretty large raises to some staff members. And now we're finding out that today the Arizona Education Association is going to hold a press conference calling for more money because teachers did get raises, but very, very small in comparison. So, Chris, start us off on this. What do you think about what we've learned about what Governor Ducey has done? Does it contradict things he has said before?
Yes. You know, if you're going to tout the fact that you gave teachers in Arizona who are horribly underpaid, and we have a dramatic teacher shortage, and that's part of the reason. If you're going to give them a 1% raise this year and 1% next year, and you end up giving your top staffers double-digit raises over the last couple of years, it looks horrible. This is deja vu for me. You know, I was a chief of staff for Fife Symington, Governor Symington, in the 90s, and he gave 10 staffers 10% raises. And the The blowback was horrible from the media. It was so bad in a 48-hour period, he rescinded the raises. So it's like governors never learn the lesson. I mean, the bottom line is it's called public service. And this is the problem when you come in and want to run government like a business. You can't do that. And I think every governor should be told, when you hire staff and state agency directors, set their salary the best you can, and then don't touch it for your entire term. Because, you know, unless you track regular state employees, and those people have to be told that it's public service, they won't get a raise for the first term. If you get reelected, you could reset them at that time. But you can't expect to make money while serving in a gubernatorial staff. If you do, you're going to end up with mud all over your face.
Now, briefly, I think what you're saying makes a lot of sense. But what about those people who say, well, you know, in order to keep these great people in government, have to have competitive salaries and benefits?
I have found that if you are a quality elected official with high integrity and stand on principle, you can always attract qualified, wonderful people to serve with you. And if you tell them in the first place that you can't give them a raise during the first term, they'll understand what they're coming into. It's public service, and if they don't like that, they shouldn't be in government.
How big of a campaign issue do you think this will ultimately be? I mean, obviously, Democrats are going to try to make it a pretty significant campaign issue. Both the Democrats running for the Democratic gubernatorial nomination have talked about this already. Is this, I mean, we're still a ways out from the campaign. Is this a campaign issue for next year?
I think the Democrats, as you say, will definitely try to make it one. I don't think, looking at the broad Arizona budget, it's not a big deal. But as Chris said, it's horrible optics. And we're in a time of belt tightening. It seems like forever we've been in an era of belt tightening. And to give raises to personal staffers, it just sets a bad signal. And full disclosure, I actually, many years ago, was a lowly graphic design manager at Cold Stone Creamery. So, and I gained about 30 pounds of memory. So it was a hostile environment for my diet. However, it does set a bad precedent. And you don't go into public service for that. You can try to, you know, make money on it after you're gone, but you're really serving in the public trust. One of the investigations, too, they did kind of conflate people getting promotions with raises. I thought that was unfair. If you're moving from one position to a position with much more responsibility, of course you're going to get paid more money. But if the argument is, well, we're doing this to keep quality employees, then everybody else finishes the sentence with, okay, so does that go for teachers and state workers and this person and that person? All people in the private sector have been tightening their belts too, so I think it could be toxic.
And Chris, quickly, I wanted to ask you something about something John just brought up about state workers, because they obviously a few years ago had the issue where they got a little bit of a raise if they decided to get rid of some of their protections. Do you think that this is maybe more of an issue comparing the raises that the governor gave to his staffers for teachers or for state employees?
I think teachers, because it's so front and center. You know, the issue of the underfunded public education system, which is horrific here in this state, that will ring more the bell more. And the fact that the AEA, the Teachers Professional Association, is going to be holding news conferences today and making that case. But it does trickle down to the state employees as well, as they watch their agency directors and deputy directors that Ducey appointed get big double-digit increases, and they're sitting there with menial little bits of money. And many of them lost their civil service protection as well when Governor Brewer was in office. So there's a lot of state employees, and I'm sure they're not pleased either.
That is former legislative leader, former gubernatorial chief of staff, Chris Hurstam. Always a good sport. Chris, thank you.
My pleasure.
And John Gabriel, editor-in-chief of Ricochet.com and an Arizona Republic contributor. John, thanks for joining us on the newscast.
Thanks for having me.
And the show continues.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.